And back on The Voice of Connecticut with a voice that you want to hear. One of the voices of the Midtown Men. This is a singing group that is going to be performing at a benefit for Sacred Heart University over at the Performing Arts Center. And this is really exciting. Before I get into a conversation with you, Daniel Reichard, one of the principal players, Daniel, welcome to you.
Thank you so much for having me, Bridget.
I was going to say, before we start our chat, I want to play a little bit of a medley from you guys and just tell our listeners to sit back and enjoy these beautiful sounds. Here we go.
Sherry, Sherry, buy me Sherry.
Daniel, forgive me. I love that Ides of March tune. I had to let that let that play. What a great selection. Welcome to you. Thank you so much for being here. I was so excited to chat with you. Tell us about the Midtown Men. Are you guys all about 60s music?
Well, you know, our story started actually on Broadway on 52nd Street when we appeared in the original cast of the Tony and Grammy Award winning show Jersey Boys. That's the story that we told of Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons. I originated the role of Bob Gaudio. Bob wrote Sherry, Baby, Oh, What a Night, Big Girls Don't Cry, Can't Take My Eyes Off You, amongst others. He was the fourth guy to come in the group for the many people who saw the show. The guy that came in and sort of completed the quartet and basically, what happened was we were performing eight shows a week on Broadway. I think the first time Michael, Bobby, Christian and I sang together outside of the theater was at Katie Couric's 50th birthday party. And Katie Couric had really launched the success of Jersey Boys on the Today Show. It was really through our performance, our debut on the Today Show that people went, you know, wild for the show. And then all of a sudden we joked that we were the Hamilton of our day. And, you know, so anyway, but we started getting asked to sing outside of the theater. And after we had done this probably 10 times for, you know, the American Red Cross and for birthday parties and for whatever, we had put together sort of accidentally our own act. And so we titled ourselves the Midtown Men, from Jersey Boys to Midtown Men. And we toured all over the world for over a decade. We've done over 1,000 concerts together, and we're still having a total blast doing what we do together.
Oh, it sounds like that, right? There's such a joy in listening to you guys sing. And by the way, not too shabby there getting the plug from Katie and going on. I mean, Jersey Boys, what a success that was on Broadway, right? And it was even a Clint Eastwood movie, right? Didn't he turn that into a movie too?
He did, yeah. So it's amazing. It's still playing all over the world, and you know, there's multiple productions happening just in the tri-state area right now, from the Paper Mill Playhouse, and you know, but just a bunch of there's the ACT of Connecticut. They're doing a production of it right now too, and so that's kind of cool too. Have been at the very beginning of that.
Yeah.
In fact, I mean, this is gonna make, you know, us all feel a little more quote unquote mature. I say don't say I feel old. Say I feel mature when I say this. But 20 years ago this year, we started working on the show in California, in La Jolla, California. That's where we did the out of town tryout before the Broadway run. So it's been 20 years, and just the fact that 20 years later, there's theaters all around the country, you know, recreating this show that we started is amazing. But
isn't that
I wanted
something?
To answer It's really amazing. Yeah. I feel blessed I was in the right place at the right time, and that the fact that it's still, we just actually had a reunion in New York City two nights ago with, a lot of the original people from that production, and Des Makhnoff, who was the brilliant visionary who directed Jersey Boys, and the producers, and Rick Ellis, who was one of the book writers. We're all together in Manhattan the other day. It was pretty spectacular.
Oh, that's great.
And
that's
just
great.
Amazing to look back at. But you were asking, I forgot to answer your question, just about what we do, and that it's the 1960s that is the sort of co-star of our concert.
Mm-hmm.
We don't just sing the songs of Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. From the beginning, we've been singing the Beatles and the Drifters and the Turtles and the Motown groups, and it just goes on and on. It's sort of like a full course meal of 1960s music. And that's what we do. And then we tell stories and we do the dance steps and we do the whole thing, but it's as ourselves. We're not in character. We've been performing, in the Midtown Men, it's really about kind of the people behind the guys that played the roles in Jersey Boys. So it's, it's really about our love for this music and, are wanting to keep the tradition and the enthusiasm for this era of rock and roll alive. And it's really awesome to see how much that means to people and people of a large span of ages, you know. So that's cool because the music is sort of timeless. So it just always sounds cool. It always sounds sort of stylish and fun.
It does. And, I noticed when I did a little Googling, by the way, I should mention we are on with the Midtown Men's Daniel Reichard, one of the principal players of the singing group that is gracing the SHU, Sacred Heart University Community Theater, with a dinner and a performance and proceeds benefiting a scholarship supporting the performing arts students in honor of President Perillo. And this is just a great thing coming up on Saturday, October 26th. I'm lucky enough to get to chat with you ahead of the big show, Daniel. And I did notice when I Googled and started listening to your music, I noticed a picture of you guys, and it looks just like the Meet the Beatles album, that iconic album cover with the four faces against that black backdrop. That was no coincidence. I take it.
Yeah, so we're always we have a Beach Boys looking picture, we have a Beatles looking picture, we just emulate these groups in certain ways, and part of the challenge and the joy of doing this over all these years is how to continue to sort of pay homage to the artists and the era and the songs, but while still keeping it fresh. So yeah, when we did that photo shoot, we said we want to do that, like sort of the forehead look of the Beatles. So yeah, and people can go to our website, themidtownmen.com, and see, where we're playing otherwise. But this show for Sacred Heart is going to be really wonderful. We've actually performed at galas before for Sacred Heart University. We have a lot of friends, a gentleman named Bill Mitchell. Mitchell's clothing, saw us years ago, and said, we got to get these guys to sing for Sacred Heart. And of course, we've met, many friends. So, to be doing a tribute to the, the president of the university who really affected the success of the university during his tenure. I think the students went from 6,000 students to 11,000 students. So he had quite a transformative effect on the university and added 20 new buildings, during his time. So we're celebrating him. We're, of course, celebrating our friend Bill Mitchell, who's the reason why we're associated with Sacred Heart. And also just celebrating all the people coming to who are contributing to this effort to expand the Performing Arts Center there and the arts program at the university, which we, of course, the four of us are always into that as a cause.
What a thing to have a great performing arts center like that. Just amazing. And we are back with Daniel Reichard, one of the principal players with the Midtown Men, a wonderful singing group. They will be performing at Sacred Heart University, a big show coming up on October 26th, the benefit for the Sacred Heart University Performing Arts. I'm just too excited about this because, Daniel, I love talking about 60s music. And so you guys do a lot of it. You mentioned the Beatles and the Beach Boys and the Four Seasons. And why do you think it has such staying power?
Well, I think that the era that these songs were written was so monumental as far as change. You know, so it was such a fresh way of communicating love and romance, justice, hope. And so, and then this emerging style of music with rock and roll, you know, it was very, very fresh. And so the songwriters, that atmosphere, I think, and that atmosphere at that time, the context of what was happening in the world when all of this was being written, and that there was this whole music scene that was absolutely exploding, made for these songs that just, you know, they just were true. They just, when you know, when they talk about love, that you think, yeah, that's exactly what it feels like to be in love.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I think there was a lot of different things. It was almost like the perfect storm of factors that went into this era of music. And so it's really fun. What we kind of do with our sort of take on it is we sort of bring a bit of the razzmatazz, the panache of, say, the Rat Pack, that those old kind of horn arrangements, you know. So our horn section is a big part about what the Midtown Men sound is like, so that we have our rhythm section, which gives it that classic rock and roll sound, but we combine it with a horn section that gives the sound also a sort of old school show business sound to it as well. And we thought that marriage of those two styles worked very, very well. And so that's sort of our signature way of performing these songs. So you're hearing songs like Happy Together and Good Lovin' by the Rascals. Then, of course, you're getting to hear Sherry Baby and Walk Like a Man and Big Girls Don't Cry, Ain't No Mountain High Enough, just to name a few of the songs.
Right. And so you have that wonderful horn section there, but you also have terrific harmonies. How hard are those to do? I always marvel at a singing group, you know, again, going back to the Beatles, you know, they're perfect three-part harmonies. Is that tough to work? Is that something you guys have to practice a lot, or does it just flow naturally?
Well, now that, you know, we've been working together for 20 years, it's been, it kind of comes as second nature to us, but you have to be very focused and very committed in the moment to doing it well. You know, I can't imagine going on stage and not giving it 100% of what I have. You know, it's not something that I ever sort of, we say like phone in or whatever, you know, that we don't just kind of go through the motions, because you have to give that same level of enthusiasm and passion to every audience, because the only real performance is the one that you're doing, you know? So that's really, I think the challenge is just bringing your full physical and emotional and mental self to the performance. That's really the challenge.
I took a look at, I hope I got correct information here, your background a little bit. Did you sing at New York City Opera?
Oh, yes, of course. So, like, right after I left Jersey Boys on Broadway, I went directly and played Candide and Leonard Bernstein's Candide at Lincoln Center, which was crazy, at the New York City Opera. But I had gone to the University of Michigan School of Music, and I had played that role. And, you know, it was kind of a...
Now I'm really impressed to be able to sing opera, too, and forget about the harmonies.
I performed alongside Richard Kind, you know, the amazing television and film and stage actor. Richard Kind is just like... And, you know, we played opposite each other, where he played Voltaire and I played Candide. And that was a one of the great highlights of my career. And one of those dream roles. And when you're looking out at Lincoln Center at the, you know, whatever it is, the four balconies, you know, with the huge chandelier, it's just, those are moments I'll always remember. And actually, you know, I'm the eighth of nine children. And I have four brothers, and one of my brothers was getting married the year Candide was out. And at Columbus Circle, there was this huge billboard of my face, you know, with my name above the title. And we were going around for a bachelor party on a bus, like we were doing like a pub crawl. And, it, you know, I'll always remember the car, you know, this big bus that we were on, this like party bus we were on, going around Columbus Circle and looking at, up at this billboard. And we all got out, my dad and my brothers and my brothers-in-law, we all stood out there. And that was one of those New York City memories that's what show business can really be all about, is the memories you get to have.
What a moment, like the Beatles being in the back of a car and hearing their song on the radio. What a great moment you just described. Daniel.
Oh, yeah. So, there's been lots of those.
So wonderful to have you here with us. And really, what a treat for the audience coming up on October 26th, Sacred Heart University, beautiful performing arts center there. And you will get to hear the music of the Midtown Men, Daniel Reichardt. Oh, before we go, Christmas music, would that be worked in or too early?
It might be too early, though. I do my own Christmas show in New York City. This year will be my 16th Christmas show in New York City. I actually started it during Jersey Boys, but I'll be playing The Cutting Room on December 17th, and tickets are going to go on sale for that soon. But the Midtown Men show is going to be just a spectacular lineup of the greatest songs from the 1960s. I know people, if you come to see the show, you'll have a blast, and you'll be supporting a great educational institution. I want to thank you, too, for having me.
Of course.
It means a lot for us to continue to tell our story, and thank you for being such a wonderful host.
Oh, thank you, and you have a great story to tell. Knock 'em dead. I know you guys are going to be great. Break a leg, whatever the showbiz sayings are. But
I love it all.
You guys are going to be dynamite, I'm sure. Thank you so much. Once again, Daniel Reichardt with the Midtown Men coming up at Sacred Heart University. In any event, our next live segment here on Newsline is all about animals, and just a really disturbing headline recently in the Hartford Current that dogs are being dumped on the side of Connecticut roads, and it's a symbol of a larger problem. Well, let's take a deep dive into this larger problem. And joining us right now from East Hartford Animal Control Officers, Jillian Capabianca and Kristen Judd. So good to have you both on the show. It just breaks your heart when you read about this. Jillian, let me start with you. There have been some horrible recent incidents. Tell us, if you would, sum up a little bit for our listeners. Dogs left out in crates or tied up or neglected. What incidents have you been made aware of, sadly?
Well, we've been seeing a lot of, like, everything you just mentioned. Dogs tied to guardrails, dogs left. Most recently, we had the one that was left that was so close to dead that we had no choice other than to have it humanely euthanized. We've had them left in apartments when people are evicted. And we pick up animals all the time that are just running loose, and then nobody comes to pick them up from us as well.
It's so sad to hear about. And Kristen, to you, so what is going on here? I'm sure a lot of things are going on here, and every case is individual. Every case is different. But Kristen, is it that some families, they adopt an animal and then they realize what, that they can't take care of it, that they can't afford to take care of it?
I mean, I think there's a lot of different reasons. I think there is maybe lack of education or being unprepared for what it costs to care for an animal. There are, you know, veterinary shortages all across the United States right now. So there's people are having a harder time finding that care. And then when they do find the care, they're faced with very large veterinary bills that they may not be able to afford. We have a housing crisis that, you know, that I don't think gets talked about a lot, where people are struggling to find affordable housing that allows pets. So they're faced with a hard decision of keeping a roof over their head or keeping their pet. And they don't have any other choice but to let them go.
Jillian, back to you. Is it that many affordable housing places do not allow pets?
Yeah, I find that it's common practice for those places to have a no pet policy. That's why we require adopters to provide us with a landlord's approval prior to adoption if they don't own their own home.
I want to talk a little bit more about the vetting, but Kristen, back to you. You touched on veterinary bills. And yeah, it's daunting when you go to the vet and, you know, a lot of folks certainly don't have insurance and you go for a visit. And of course, you want to do what's best for your animal, but it's daunting. And I guess, Kristen, just the upkeep, if you will, the regular shots. I'm not even talking about if there's a medical problem for an animal.
Yeah, I mean, they say that every dog owner or pet owner should have $1,000 put aside for an emergency. I think that's a hard task right now for a lot of people to even consider saving that kind of money for an emergency. Shots and routine care is also, you know, that's expensive as well. So, yeah, I just think it's tough.
Yeah,
can
yeah.
I add something on that?
Of course, please do.
We're commonly seeing very young animals being abandoned. Not always, but it is commonly, you know, 1 and 2 year old animals that are being abandoned and let loose. And I think the real problem is falling when those people who are choosing to get these pets don't know what it costs to take care of them. They don't know ahead of time what it costs. And there needs to be more education before we allow people to own animals. You know, before we adopt to them, we need to make sure they understand what it costs, because veterinary care is just like everything else in the world. It's getting more expensive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
and it's
so
not the
true.
Vet being greedy, like a lot of people want to think, is that their costs are going up and they need to increase the price of things. So it's a fact. It's not something we can really do anything about. So people need to know these things before they choose to bring an animal into their home.
Right. You really, really need to think about it and think about your budget and your home. And let's go to the phone. Jim from Stratford. Jim, you have a question for Jillian Capabianca and Kristen Judd over at East Hartford Animal Control.
Yeah. My house insurance just went out of business. And I guess all the floods and everything, I got to notice I have to find a new homeowner's policy for my two-family house. And I have dogs, and what a nightmare. Nobody wants to insure you with a dog. I have a rescue body, and I was thinking about getting 2 rescue pits who are being put down Friday if they don't find a home.
Any advice, ladies?
Well, I will say personally, State Farm Insurance, as long as you don't have any bites on your record, State Farm does not care what breed of animal you have, as long as they haven't had a bite incident. State Farm doesn't care what the breed is.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that is good to know. Apologize there, Jim. That was kind of a shaky phone line. Hope we were able to help you out with the information from Jillian Capabianca and Kristen Judd with us from East Hartford Animal Control. And we were talking about a little bit about the vetting. When people adopt dogs, I know you said that you're very, very careful and ask a lot of questions. What questions, let me go to you, Jillian, would you say are sometimes not asked when a person is adopting a dog?
Well, I can only speculate because I only know what we do. And I know the things that when I'm running into people who are having conflicts with their animals, I know the things that they seem unprepared for. So, you know, landlord issues is a big one. And we, if you don't own your home, like we talk to the landlords. And I would hope that other rescue groups and adoption agencies for animals, like I would hope that they start asking that as well. Because if a person has been, you know, and if their living history is that they're moving apartments every year and they're going to have to find a new rental that allows them to have a dog, it's going to make it more difficult for them to maintain ownership of that dog. However, if a person has, you know, lived in one apartment that allows dogs for the last 5 or 10 years, okay, it seems like that's a stable environment where even though we don't want to say that if you don't own your home, you can't have a pet, but there's a whole lot to consider, like mm-hmm. where you're living. Though that's a huge thing that people, you need to know before you're placing an animal in that home is if their home environment is going to be, you know, long lasting for that animal.
Right, right. We are back with two East Hartford animal control officers, Jillian Capobianca and Kristen Judd. We've been talking about animals being abandoned because, well, frankly, some people find that they just can't take care of their pets. When a person is adopting a pet, Kristen, to you, what do you want to ask before you give a pet to somebody? What do you want to know about them other than their living situation? What are some other important questions to ask?
I think when you're trying to match a human family with a pet, you want to know a little bit about their lifestyle, right? Are they active? You know, are they looking for a dog that they want to go hiking with? Are they looking for a couch potato pet? Are they looking for, you know, something small and furry like guinea pigs? You want to know what they're looking for, what their lifestyle is like, and what they're prepared to handle. You also, the living arrangements become really important when you have a vocal dog, right? You don't necessarily want to send a hound or a beagle into an apartment style living because that dog may be very vocal and it's not, you know, conducive to that environment.
Yeah, right. Jillian, you really have to consider the breed too. I remember when we were looking, we thought for a moment, oh, a German Shepherd would be lovely. A family member had one, but we were dissuaded from that. You know, that's a dog that needs a lot of serious training, and we weren't up for that.
Yeah, I mean, German Shepherds are definitely a particular breed. A lot of what we're seeing lately, we see a lot of Huskies because they're really pretty and everybody wants to own one, but they howl and they run away. And it's one of those, you want to make sure that when you're having a specific breed, that the people who are looking to adopt these animals, you need to know what that breed is bred to do, what's in their genes, what's their genetic makeup telling them to do, and are you going to be able to exercise that physical need, that mental need that each breed needs, and each breed is completely different. It becomes a little bit trickier when we have a lot of mixed breeds, you know, so you have to kind of, that's when me and Kristen, you know, will assess each dog on a case-by-case basis, and we have to try and determine what drive is biggest in that dog and what's going to be the most important thing for that dog to be satisfied in a home, you know, so that it can thrive there.
Mm-hmm. And Kristen, to you, if you were to adopt an animal and you find yourself in a very difficult housing situation, you know, we were speaking with that one caller a moment ago, or you're just in a tough spot, or you just feel like maybe you picked the wrong breed, you're just having a tough time really giving that animal a good quality of life, what should you do?
I mean, there's a couple of different things you can do. If you're committed to that animal and you're looking for resources on how to manage a behavior or other resources, there's groups that you can reach out to. You can contact your town's animal control officer, may have resources to offer you, you know, to work on specific things. If it's rehoming, you can reach out to your animal control officer for some resources. They might be able to guide you to an appropriate rescue to help rehome your animal and guide you that way. That's probably the best way to do it. You can rehome your animal on your own as well, but that comes with its own set of things to worry about.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you say rehome, meaning having a friend or an acquaintance take the animal for you?
Animal control, they typically don't take owner surrenders because they're usually, you know, we're out picking up roaming animals and things like that. But there's resources. There's other organizations out there that may have space for your animal, depending on the animal breed, what you're looking for. So we do keep a list of resources in our office that we offer our residents when they're looking to rehome.
Mm-hmm. Jillian, back to you. When you, you know, pick up these dogs that have been abandoned or dumped or neglected, and again, it's so heartbreaking to talk about it, but is there hope? I guess, do some of those animals wind up being placed in good homes?
Oh yeah and I think that majority of them are. You know, we have the extreme cases, unfortunately, that we have had recently where they were too sick or injured to save. But in our case that we had a couple of months ago where the dog was found tied to a guardrail, that dog found a home before the people who did it were even arrested. He moved on to a very nice life. So I think the majority of our cases have, you know, a happily ever after.
Right.
But there are always those cases where the dog is not considered adoptable. So.
Right. And is there a way, Jillian, to help people keep animals? In other words, if somebody is struggling, is there somebody that they can talk to, somebody that they should call? Should they call a vet? Should they call you folks? Should they call a shelter to say, you know, if they said, well, I don't really know what to do here. Help me out. I want to take care of this dog.
So all of the above, really. You can talk to us. You can talk to a veterinarian. When you say shelter, I'm not really sure that there's any, like, shelters per se out there. But me and Kristen both have spent a lot of time, I want to say the word maybe counseling, giving ideas, recommending training. We've provided food for people. If finding dog food or cat food is really the difference between them being able to keep their dog or not, we're not going to throw the book at you because your dog's overdue on a vaccine if you can't even afford food for your dog. So, you know, a lot of times we will provide food and then get them set up on a program where there's a food pantry for dog food where they can get continuing assistance with things like that. We've talked, you know, training with people on the phone, you know, socializing behaviors with children in the home or other animals. Our goal, because the best thing for that dog and for that person is usually to keep the animal with the family.
Right. Yeah, right. So you don't disturb. Yeah, it's tough for them to get used to new circumstances. It really is. And yeah, again, you know, you just hate to hear these stories. But again, a great advice from both of you, Jillian Capobianca and Kristen Judd, giving us a little bit of hope there about animals that might have been abandoned or neglected. There is a way to get help and you know, try to do a better job if you can. East Hartford Animal Control Officers Jillian Capobianca, Kristen Judd, we thank you so very much.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, ladies.